I found myself looking full into the face of the question, is God good? And I couldn't find the answer. And that was so, so difficult because I felt like I wanted to be able to say that God was good, but I honestly couldn't say it because I didn't know if I believed it anymore. I didn't know whether I could accept that he could be good when this thing was happening to me in such an incredibly painful way.
You actually have to believe in something that makes you look like an idiot.
We all have strengths and we all have struggles.
Of course I love you. And Jay just looked at me and said, not the real me.
Held in a dungeon for 165 days, not knowing when we were going to be set free.
God remains present in all of it.
Legitimately suffering.
Focus on living. Don't focus on not being sick.
There really is blessedness in brokenness.
This is A Broken Hallelujah. Well, welcome back, everyone. This is episode 2 of season 2 of A Broken Hallelujah. We're glad that you are back listening with us. And we are growing in our listener base. I'm so grateful for all the new people that have joined us even for the start of season 2. And if you haven't yet heard Shane Claiborne's interview that I did just in the last episode as we kicked off season 2, really want to encourage you to check that out. It was an incredible conversation and stories from Shane, who has lived with some of the most poor and impoverished people in India and in the US, and has an incredible view about nonviolence and the whole of life. And anyway, it was an amazing conversation. Check it out. That's just the episode before this one. But we're back. We took a couple of months break, and I think I explained last time that the episodes for season 2 are going to come out a little bit less frequently as I really try to target specific people. I'm trying to do less but more with this podcast, if that makes sense. So perhaps we'll have a fewer number of guests moving forward each season, but I'm really trying to target guests that are bringing a very high quality reflection around suffering and what they've been through. And I hope that you as the listeners will enjoy that reality, will enjoy the fact that these conversations are really at a level that I think will be helpful for anyone that's listening and going through something that is deeply challenging. And today's episode is no exception. I'm going to be talking to one of my closest friends in the whole world. His name's Dave Gotz. Dave runs an incredible humanitarian organization called International China Concern. He'll tell you a little bit more about that. But really, the conversation with Dave today is largely around just the incredible journey he's had in dealing with suffering for children and suffering with children. And I want to just maybe make a little bit of a note right at the start of this episode. We don't go into huge amounts of detail on the suffering of children in, you know, in any specific kind of way. But that is the conversation. That is the work that Dave does. And that work is also very personal to him, as he went through an incredibly difficult time with one of his children who went through cancer. And so that's going to be the conversation today. But I do want to encourage you to stick around, because while the subject matter is obviously quite weighty and difficult, the insights that Dave has towards hope and life and love and beauty in the midst of suffering and some of the worst suffering that you could imagine is just incredible. So he takes us on a journey of talking a bit about the challenge that they had with their son, Kieran, the cancer journey that Kieran went through, which ultimately resulted in Kieran's passing away. And Dave talks a little bit about that very beautifully, honestly, openly about that. And again, his insights there are just so important. He talks about the importance of encounter and how he really wrestled with his understanding of God throughout all of this, and yet the beauty and power of encounter and how God met him in the midst of that journey. He then shares about his wife's cancer, and his wife Linda was diagnosed just shortly after Kieran was given a terminal diagnosis. And that journey was incredibly hard, and how they processed that as a couple and as a family. He talks about the relationship of beauty and suffering and how those two things come together, particularly finding treasures in the midst of great tragedy. And then we talk about death and love. and how those two things come together in a really incredibly profound way for him. And the story that he shares is just really moving. So I think you'll really appreciate his reflections around that. One thing I do want to say, this podcast was actually recorded just a little while ago. But since the recording of this podcast, his wife, Linda, has also passed away from cancer. And that obviously is something that we just want to acknowledge and just continue to speak out life and love for Dave, for his son Jamie, and for what they are going through at this time. Obviously, I have Dave's permission to put this podcast out in a time of mourning for him. He wanted to make sure that the message was going to get out there, so you guys could be blessed by that. But I want to dedicate personally this episode to Linda. She was an incredible woman. I had the privilege of meeting her on a number of occasions and sit and listen to her wisdom and hear her heart and love for the work that obviously Dave was doing for her family, and just the spiritual insights as a spiritual leader that she carried. So we dedicate this episode to Linda. I think this is going to be a phenomenal conversation, and I know you're going to be blessed by it. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Dave Gotts. Well, Dave, thanks so much for joining A Broken Hallelujah. It's great to have you with us today.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. It's good to be with you too.
Now, obviously, a lot of people listening on the podcast may not be aware of yourself and your background. So why don't we just start with you telling us a little bit about who you are, your family, where you're based, and what it is that you do.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, well, my name is David Gotts, and I'm originally from the United Kingdom. But I left the United Kingdom when I was 19 years old, really following a sense of calling from God to serve him in Hong Kong and China. And so I've spent a lot of my life actually in Hong Kong and China, about 11 years in total. But then in 2001, I relocated to Vancouver, BC in Canada, and got married and had my two children and continue to work into China even today. So I've been working and ministering to China now for about 31 years.
And so basically you founded an NGO, International China Concern. Tell us a little bit about what ICC is, because I think it really does connect both with your heart and your journey, but also I think with what we're going to be speaking about for the rest of the time that we're going to be chatting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, International China Concern, or ICC, for me really is where my experience, I suppose, of suffering began. You know, when I was 22 years old and had this sense of calling to work in China, I didn't know where I was going to end up, but I ended up in a Chinese welfare center or state-run orphanage, and it was a life-changing experience for me.
Right.
I saw for the very first time the kind of suffering that children can experience in this world. Babies, toddlers, young children, abandoned because they had disabilities, malnourished, neglected, many of them dying. And it challenged and transformed my life and caused me to begin this work, International China Concern, I believe in response to God having heard the cries of those children.
Right.
But it was actually an intensely difficult experience to be, for the very first time, so up close and personal with suffering, having children literally die in our arms.
I mean, I can only imagine as a young man, I think you were in your early 20s at the time, just how that would significantly shape the person that you were going to become, but also, I guess, the faith that you would eventually be developing. I mean, you were a Christian going into it, but I can only imagine experiences like that at a young age and at a relatively young faith would be quite shaping to the future of your faith. As you look back over the last sort of 20 plus years that you've been serving children with disabilities in China, what sort of trajectory do you think your faith has gone on in encountering their stories, and how has that impacted you?
I think, you know, it impacts you very deeply, because when you first encounter a situation like that, you know, you walk in and you feel like you are observing something just as if you were watching it on a TV news report.
Right. Yeah.
But then when you move into it more and you engage more with it and you begin to touch the humanity of each of those children, and you begin to realize that each one is a life, is a person with hopes and dreams. Each person's story is unique. You cannot help but be changed. And of course, there were children that I connected with, ones that my heart were bonded to. Many of them I still know today, 30 years later. But those children, you know, I saw them in their weakest, most desperate moments, literally sometimes clinging onto the very edge of life. And of course, for me, I had to try and reconcile that with my sense of who God is in this world.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, I cried out to him. I was like, why is it like this? And, you know, the response back to me was, well, you're here. What are you going to do about it? And I think that changed me a huge amount, because for the first time I was faced with my responsibility when I encounter suffering in the world. Now, this, of course, was out there in the world as it was, but God had brought me into a situation where he was asking me to respond to something that was intensely painful. And to be honest, I didn't want to do it. You know, right. I think when any of us come up close towards intense suffering and pain, our natural reaction, our inclination is to turn away, not turn towards. But, you know, God is sometimes relentless in his loving pursuit of us. And after a period of about 9 months, I found myself disarmed to the point where I knew that God was asking this of me, and that I had to trust that he was going to be sufficient for me. And so, you know, that encounter with suffering when I was 22 years old completely changed the trajectory of my life.
Amazing. So I think that's what I really want to kind of lean into a little bit in our conversation today, because, you know, what we're going to discover in your story is that suffering wasn't just something that was external to you in terms of your relationship with these children in China, but that suffering was going to become very personal to you in terms of relationship with your family. You know, your journey is quite a remarkable one, but perhaps not completely unique, in the sense that I can imagine that a lot of people that might be listening to this may also have stories of, you know, suffering that has come through pain and trial for family members, maybe immediate family members or those in their extended family. And so it is a personal thing. And I think this is something that I'm quite interested to explore with you. Why don't we start just by telling us a little bit about what that journey was for you? Obviously, it involved your eldest child, Kieran, as well as eventually your wife. And obviously, you know, the fact that that happened in relatively short space of time was also quite overwhelming to you. Yeah, if you don't mind, take us into the journey and tell us a little bit about what happened and what the process was for you in that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I was really blessed in 2002 to marry an amazing woman from Ireland who I met at Regent College in Vancouver. And, you know, we settled into married life here in Vancouver and really entered into a season that was a beautiful season for us as a new couple. I continue to serve God, you know, with ICC's work in China. And we started building our family. And,
right.
You know, when our first son came along, Jamie, we were, of course, ecstatic and thrilled to have him. And then just 22 months later, our second son, Kieran, came along. Mm. And again, of course, ecstatic, thrilled. So felt that sense of completion when Kieran was added to our family.
Mm.
But about 3 months after Kieran was born, one evening, my wife was breastfeeding him when she noticed that his hand was kind of jerking. And, you know, I'd seen enough in my work in China with children with disabilities to realize that there was something going on that needed medical attention. So
right. We
called our local nurses line. They told us to bundle him up and take him straight down to the Children's Hospital in Vancouver. And that really was the beginning of a very disorienting time, because what we learned over the next few days was that my son had been born with a neurological disorder that was going to cause seizures and global developmental delay, a range of disabilities, actually. And so, you know, the first kind of twist, as it were, in my life and in our family life was actually coming to understand that now disability, the very issue that I'd engaged with in China with children for many years already, was now within my own family, and that I was now living as the parent of a child with complex disabilities, a child that may never speak, may never walk, that would always be trying to catch up with other children. And for my wife and I, that was incredibly disorienting.
Right. Yeah. And that's exactly what I was going to say is like, you know, this is fascinating because, you know, I guess for immediately, this is a shift for you because you're dealing with children with disabilities in China. And obviously, your heart's broken for those children. You're caring for them. You're going above and beyond what most human beings would do. Started an NGO. You've given your life to them. But they're still somebody else's children or they're still external to you. This is now happening to your own son. How did that feel? Did that feel unjust? Did it feel... like, come on, God, I'm serving all these kids over here. You know, how come this is now happening right on my doorstep? Like, was there any of that kind of thing going on?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying if I said that there wasn't. You know, what's interesting, Andrew, is when my wife and I were trying to have children, I remember distinctly one evening saying to her, I don't know how I would do if we had a child with a disability. And I was just being really honest with her because having seen so many children with disabilities and encountered just some of the struggles and the challenges that they faced and also that were faced in terms of providing care, I knew to have that in my own family would be an intense challenge. And so, of course, when Kieran was diagnosed with having complex disabilities, the questions really came up. And, you know, sometimes we don't let those questions bubble right to the top of our consciousness. We let them kind of simmer deep down. And I think that's what I did. So without a doubt, in that simmering, there was this sense of, you know, God, I've given years at that point, 18 years of my life helping children with disabilities. You know, how can this be happening? And yet it was happening. And I knew it was happening. And there was nowhere to go. There was nowhere to run. And of course, as much as there was that pain because of my son's situation, there was also a greater, more stronger depth of love. And so all we could do was hold him. And, you know, I remember days where we would be going about doing something and Kieran would all of a sudden have a seizure and we'd be literally looking at our watches, counting the minutes to see whether it would go beyond a certain period where we would have to call 911, and intensely stressful. But, you know, beautiful as well, because he was ours. He was our child and God's gift to us. And so very difficult time. You know, those first few years were challenging, but Kieran actually hit a pretty steady spot. And we were so grateful for that. But then when he was about 3 years old, things changed again. Remember one day just waking up and seeing that his face seemed a little lopsided, that it wasn't quite right. And we put it down to maybe seizure activity. And so we took him into the children's hospital. You know, they were looking and saying, well, could it be medication? And eventually, after a number of days under which he became really quite ill, he was diagnosed as having a brain tumor, having cancer. And so, you know, again, having walked a really tough 3 years, it felt like we got hit again with this news that Kieran had a tumor near his brainstem and that it was cancerous and that it was going to be, again, another long journey that would also have a profound impact, even more so on his development. And so that really knocked us both off our feet.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, was there any sort of thought around, you know, come on, God, give this kid a break? You know, he's already got the challenges and now there's this extra challenge that's come. I mean, again, like how was that something that you and Linda processed? Did you just sort of take it? I'm sure you didn't just take it in your stride, but did you just kind of go, okay, we faced some disabilities and challenges with this child before, we're just going to button down and face this one? Or was it kind of an exasperation of like, why? You know, I don't,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think it was all of those things. So I can distinctly remember different kinds of reactions going on inside of me. There was the calm part of me. I go calm in a crisis and I do that to kind of be the steady one. And I went calm in the crisis and, you know, focused myself in making sure that we just simply, you know, could do everything that needed to be done, make the decisions around chemotherapy and surgery that needed to be made.
Right.
And then there was the other part of me that at that point just couldn't pray anymore. I felt like my faith had just been wrung out of me. And it wasn't that I was resenting God in any way. It was more, I just had nothing left inside of me anymore. And I remember thinking, I don't know how to go through this because I don't feel like I can pray. But where I kind of came to was this place of feeling like, I'm just going to have to rest on the faith and the love that my friends and my community have for me and Linda before Jesus. I can't walk this. They're going to have to carry me before God. And so that enabled me to keep moving. But I'll be honest and tell you that I really began to question the goodness of God. Hmm. You know, I'd never in my life questioned it as deeply as I was forced to question it in that moment. Now, several years earlier, I'd gone through a really difficult situation in our ministry in ICC where one of our staff members made the very painful decision to leave his wife and to go off with somebody and begin a new relationship. And that affected me very, very deeply because that individual also happened to be the best man at my wedding and a real faithful ministry, partner in ministry.
Right. Yeah.
And so I'd gone through that incredibly difficult situation. But when this situation with Kieran happened and we learned about his cancer, the questions I had buried way back during that time when my friend had gone off, the questions around God's goodness, they resurfaced with a vengeance. And I found myself looking full into the face of the question, is God good? And I couldn't find the answer. And that was so, so difficult because I felt like I wanted to be able to say that God was good, but I honestly couldn't say it because I didn't know if I believed it anymore. I didn't know whether I could accept that he could be good when this thing was happening to me in such an incredibly painful way.
Yeah, I think this is so interesting. And it'd be good to like maybe just briefly lean into this bit because I think, again, like with a lot of people listening, I think this will resonate with those that have a faith and are going through a really hard time right now. And they're kind of like, I've got some big questions of God and I don't actually know if it's okay for me to have them. Like I think there's a sort of like, particularly if you've been raised in a church and particular church traditions where it's like even like asking those questions are not is not necessarily welcomed.
That's right.
And so therefore the problem is in Christian circles like that, you then don't have anywhere to go when you're asking those questions. Cause you're like, okay, I can't really go to my pastor or my church context because I never hear anybody asking those questions. So where do I go? I know for me, in my own personal journey, of suffering, I found myself a little bit like you, but slightly different where I was like, okay, I know I love you, God, but I don't like you very much. Yeah. So there's this kind of like, you know, it's like, I know you're real, God, but I'm wrestling with the reality of whether you're good. And if you're not good, so where did you go? I mean, you shared a moment ago that, you know, you went to your community at one point when you felt like you just didn't have the energy to pray. But here you are now asking some pretty strong existential theological questions about God. Where did you go with those?
Well, I think I realized that the theology that I carried around inside me was not a theology that could survive this situation. So I identified that there was something wrong with my theology. You see, because I was coming to this place of not being able to accept that God could be good if these things were happening to me. And therefore, something's wrong because we know that God is good. And so I must be believing something that was at conflict with who God truly is. And so, you know, recognizing that there's somehow something wrong in my theology was kind of helpful for me. And I actually ended up going along to a conference this is a very dramatic
Not
title.
A conference.
A conference, and it was called The Dark Night of the Soul. And I just thought to myself, well, how apt is that? Because you just described where I'm at. And I went along to this conference, and it was a weekend-long conference. My son was in the hospital. My wife was looking after him. I felt like I was hanging on by my fingernails. And I went out of desperation, honestly. God, I need you to do something.
Right.
And so I went to that conference, and literally every session, the words bounced off me. Nothing went in. I felt like everything I heard just bounced off this kind of hard shell, and I could not receive anything that would touch my heart. And I became so kind of resigned to the fact that I was in this kind of stasis, this situation that wasn't going to change, and I didn't know how I could bear it.
Right.
And then we got to the very last session of the conference. And as they were finishing up, literally finishing up the entire conference, they said, well, we'd like to create one more opportunity for people to respond in prayer. So if you would like prayer, please raise your hand and somebody will, you know, will come from alongside you and they'll pray for you. And so I closed my eyes thinking, this is not going to do any good, but God, I'm putting my hand up. And I closed my eyes. And within about 15 seconds, I felt this hand, gentle hand on my shoulder. And I heard these words that pierced me to the heart. And they were simple. The individual just said, I just love the way you hold Kieran. And I didn't know [S2] Wow. [S1] Who it was that was saying these words. Turned out it was actually someone from my church, an older lady with an amazing prayer ministry. That was all she said. I just love the way you hold Kieran. And in that, literally that split second, the Holy Spirit literally erupted inside of me. And I began to weep and weep and weep. And I knew why I was weeping. I was weeping because God was saying to me, David, when you look after Kieran, you hold him to protect him. You feed him. You carry him. There is never a moment when he is not in your thoughts. There is never a moment when you are not looking to see if he's okay. Mm. And that's what I'm doing with you. And that's what I've been doing with you. And it broke something inside me, Andrew. And I wept and wept. And I wept for all the years where I'd carried the questions about God's goodness. I wept for all the questions I'd had about, is God good in the middle of this situation with Kieran? And something was settled in my spirit that day, irrevocably, I would say, that I came to know the goodness of God. And I've never questioned it since then. I've had a lot of hard times since then, but I've never questioned it since then. And, you know, walking up and out of that situation, Kieran responded to 10 months of chemotherapy. He was well. We were excited to get back on with life as a family, for me to fully re-engage with ICC. And so it seemed the trajectory of circumstances was going a much more positive way. God had done an incredible thing in me, and I knew I'd emerged out of it a different person.
Yeah. I think what's really fascinating about that is one thing that I wrestle with as a pastor all the time, which is, you know, we absolutely believe in theology, and theology is critical. And, you know, I'm always taken to, you know, Acts 17, and there's Paul, and he's sort of saying, like, you guys are even worshiping an unknown God. And I'm thinking, so often, if we take theology from our churches, we'll end up worshiping an unknown God. We're worshiping a God that we don't understand. Theology has such an important place. And yet I also realize in my journeys with suffering and in all these conversations on the podcast that I have with people that have had profound encounters of suffering, theology is often not the thing that will enable them to get through it. It is encounter that enables it. And I think that's what you're kind of sharing there. And we can't force encounter. You know, it's really fascinating. One lovely lady's gentle hand on your shoulder in a simple phrase, you know, breaks the hardened ground and puts you in a place of just encounter with the Lord again. And I think the irony of all of that is that suffering usually drives us away from the presence of God, when it's actually the presence of God that we need the most.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think your story really helps to strengthen that reality, but I think also shows us, excuse me, the journey that you were on there. It wasn't like you could suddenly jump into that presence. It took some time. And yet the Lord was faithful to you. He was the one who was holding you throughout that whole time, even when you weren't necessarily knowing or experiencing it, right?
Yeah. And I would say, Andrew, that the encounter was it was an experience of correcting my theology. Because, you know, I think in my own heart and mind, there was this idea, which I think many Christians carry, that God, if I'm good enough, if I do enough, if I serve you, you will protect me from the hard things.
Yes.
And actually, that's not a promise that God ever makes to us, you know, but his promise is, when you enter the hard things, when you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I am with you. I am carrying you. And so for me, the encounter was a correction of theology, so much so that it settled something, I believe, irrevocably in my soul. And so I agree with you. The encounter, the Spirit coming in, can help shift our theology to where it ought to be. That was precious to me.
No, that's really good. Now, obviously, that's not the end of your journey, because things continued. Take us into kind of what happened next, and in particular, obviously, what eventually took place for Kieran.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, just after Kieran was finishing up his that treatment for cancer at 3 years old, literally the same month that he finished his treatment, my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. And so my wife, Linda, the most amazing woman that you will ever meet, godly Christian leader, passionate, committed, you know, found this lump, and it turned out to be breast cancer. And so, you know, once again, we found ourselves blindsided, coming straight off 10 incredibly difficult months, and now looking at another cancer journey. And it was, you know, difficult, as she went through a mastectomy, and then she went through chemotherapy herself. Very, very challenging, again, disorienting, but we were solid. We felt that we were solid, that we were able to walk that with what we had learned and experienced of Jesus through what we'd been through with Kieran. And so, you know, 2012, 2013, two really awfully difficult years, but 2 years where we almost felt like we were being broken in order to be made whole. So that the things that were broken in us needed to be rebroken in order to be made better, to be made better than they had been. And that's what it felt like, that we were being changed. And so, again, we came out of, you know, my wife's cancer treatment. We rejoiced at the end of that.
Right.
And we thought, okay, plain sailing from here on in.
We're going to have a break.
Exactly. We can breathe again. And, you know, you fast forward right through to 2016. And in the October of 2016, I was in the process of making some pretty big decisions around my role within the work of ICC. I'd led the work of ICC for, at that point, 23 years as the CEO. It had been an amazing journey. I'd loved every moment of it. But God began to speak about putting down that particular role of CEO, remaining in ICC's work, but functioning more as the founder of the organization. So right. Being able to focus in on some of the, you know, the things like the spiritual life of the work and other aspects. And so I remember communicating with ICC's international board, of which, of course, you were a board member at that time, and saying, you know, I feel that God is saying it's right for me to step away. And it was hard to do, but I knew it was right. I think it was hard for you guys to hear as a board, but again, I think, you know, I'm so thankful for the respect and the encouragement that was given to me. So at the very beginning of October 2016, I made that decision. Well, about 10 days later, Kieran became sick again and was having a really tough time walking. And so I bundled him up and I took him into the Children's Hospital, a place that we'd become so familiar with by that point.
Right.
And, you know, the doctor said, well, look, we'll do an MRI and we'll see what's going on. And they came back just a few hours later and sat me down and basically said, you know, Kieran has this thing called a glioblastoma. It's a brain tumor that has been brought about because of the radiation treatment that he had for his first cancer. And we'd been warned that could happen. And, you know, what they went on to explain was that glioblastomas are very fast, very aggressive brain tumors, and that Kieran would have about 6 months left and was going to pass away. And so, again, you can imagine having gone through, you know, Kieran's cancer, now Linda's cancer, had a brief season of respite, to be back in that situation again felt incredibly difficult. And Linda and I just, you know, we wept because of our beautiful boy that we didn't want to lose and say goodbye to. And we walked those days just after that. And then literally 10 days after that, Linda hadn't been feeling so well. And she went to the doctor and they did some tests on her. And they basically came back and said that your breast cancer has reoccurred and it's metastasized to your liver, and then it would go on to metastasize to her brain. and that it was also going to be terminal. And so we're literally within 10 days of each other, both Kieran and Linda were given terminal diagnoses, which was, you can imagine, absolutely devastating.
My goodness. It's kind of hard to even, I mean, it's hard for a listener, for myself and for those listening right now, probably to get our heads around just the, you know, just that kind of combination of bad news, and just how shocking that must have been. I mean, how did you even begin to, I mean, you said earlier that, you know, you're quite a strong person when it comes to that initial reaction of going into calm mode and kind of rolling your sleeves up and getting things. Was that kind of your reaction? Did you jump back into that? Or given the journey you had already been on, did you find yourself reacting differently this time?
I think there was an aspect of calm for sure. And then there was also an aspect of intense grief, because what had been a possibility with the, you know, with both Kieran and Linda's previous bouts of cancer was now a probability, you know, unless God did a miracle, that I was going to lose both Kieran and I was going to lose my wife. And so we cried. There was an awful lot of tears. There was, you know, just sometimes looking into each other's eyes, not really able to verbalize and speak. But, you know, there was this purveying sense of God's presence and a purveying sense of God's goodness. And that's what amazed me, that that work that had been done those years ago around the goodness of God, that's why I say I think it's irrevocable, because it withstood this incredible onslaught of learning that my son was going to pass away and Linda would at some point in the future too. And so I felt like there was this foundation that was strong and that somehow we would get through it. And, you know, the 6 months of walking with Kieran were absolutely beautiful.
Right.
It was 6 months of grief and sadness, but it was almost like we understood something that many of us take for granted. And that is that the time that we have with our loved ones is to be cherished. And so every moment with Kieran and with Linda, it felt like we were living it in Technicolor. No longer this kind of black and white where you just stumble through life, but we would see beauty in so many things, in the gentle touch of a nurse that was caring for him, in the view of the mountains from the hospice bedroom, you know, so many different things. We felt we saw God in so many different ways. And so it was a beautiful, sacred time, but a heartbreaking time. And you know, I think one of the most heartbreaking times was when Kieran was fairly close to death, he wasn't really conscious anymore. And Jamie, my son, and Linda and I, we sat on our bed in the hospice, and we all wrote the words that we wanted to say to Kieran. And then one by one, we went and we spoke them over him. And, you know, hearing my son speak those beautiful words over his brother, and hearing Linda speak her heart over the son that she so passionately loved.
Yeah.
It was heartbreaking and staggeringly beautiful all at the same time. And I think maybe that's, you know, there isn't always beauty in suffering, but there's kind of treasure to be found, you know, and that's one of the things, like in Isaiah 45, this scripture has meant a lot to me. It was given to me by a friend prior to this particular time, that sense of, I will give you hidden treasures, riches stored in secret places, so that you may know that I am the Lord, the God of Israel, who summons you by name. And that became such a real experience of pain and loss and sadness and grief and hidden treasure and riches and the sense of God being the one that was with us. And so it's very difficult to explain, I think, but there was just this real sense of beauty in the midst of tragedy. And, you know, when Kieran passed away, it felt like a part of us kind of died in a way. And yet it also felt like this natural transition of Kieran moving right into the arms of Jesus. I remember saying to Linda in those last few days, it felt like the veil was very thin. It felt like Jesus was already present and he was just waiting for Kieran to take that next step. And you know, I mean, yeah, hard and heavy, but also beautiful. And I know, I hope that sounds real, because it is real for me, for us in our experience. It may not be everybody's, and I fully acknowledge that.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, this is interestingly actually something that I've been talking to my church in Hong Kong about recently, which is the I think divinely designed connection between beauty and suffering. And I think it's an underappreciated reality of scripture. I think there's so many stories, there's so many encounters with how the Bible defines beauty and the reality of suffering, and how those two things kind of come together. And it warms my heart to hear that was also the encounter in your journey. Like you say, it may not be the encounter for everybody's journey, but the reality of you being able to, even in the midst of it, not just looking back on it, but even in the midst of it, kind of being able to connect the grace of God and the pain and horror, really, of a disease that was taking your son's life. I think those are some of the most profound human moments we can have. One of the questions I wanted to ask, and this might be a little bit personal, but it just occurred to me as you were telling the story, how did Kieran process his death? Was he, you know, in that 6 months journey that you had with him, you know, how aware was he of his context and the situation, and how did you guys help him to process the, like you say, you know, if God didn't step in with a miracle, there was going to be this reality for him. What was, as a parent, how did you even contemplate doing that journey?
Yeah, you know, it was probably a somewhat unique experience because of the complexity of Kieran's disabilities. You know, Kieran was never verbal and had an intellectual disability. He was a sweet boy, you know, the most good-natured, good-tempered boy. I have so many memories of him just, you know, coming after we'd finished our evening meal and just sitting on my lap and snuggling into me. It was almost like, you know, sometimes I think those of us that are intellectually able, fully able, we're so caught up in so many things. Kieran wasn't. He was very pure and very simple. And in that purity and in that simplicity, for him, it was all about giving and receiving love. And so he would come and sit with me because he wanted to be loved, and I would be loved by him. And, you know, my wife talks so many times about how she would rush around the house doing things. And as she walked through the living room, Kieran would be sat on the sofa and he would pat the cushion next to him. And that would be saying to Linda, just come sit down.
Come spend some time with me.
Come spend some time with me. And she would then go and she would sit and she would realize that was what she needed. The busyness wasn't what she needed. It's, you know, maybe the Martha and Mary thing. It's that sense of, you know, what is needful at that time. And so for Kieran, those last 6 months, it was all of it was about giving and receiving love, being together, you know, holding each other. I have photographs of me lying in bed with him, snuggling with him. You know, the night before he died, Linda lay with him in her arms. And I have no doubt that boy was loved through into the kingdom of God at all. And I don't know how much he understood. I don't think he probably understood that he was dying, but he knew he was loved. And I think that was a beautiful thing. It comforted us, and I believe and I trust that it comforted him.
Well, I think also, you know, the reality is too, if he had such a, like you say, there was a purity to him where he probably perceived love in a deeper level than perhaps many of us would or can.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like you say, in that thin space that you sensed, you know, in the last few days before he passed and Jesus being already present with him, there's no doubt really that Kieran would have connected deeply to the love of Christ in those moments as well. And so, like you say, that transition into death, which really is a transition into a new type of life, was one that probably Kieran was aware of to some degree, as it was this love of Christ that came to envelop him, to bring him into his new phase of life. So,
totally. You know, that sort of sense that it talks about in 2 Corinthians, you know, outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed. That's what we felt we were living. Kieran was wasting away, but inwardly it felt like there was a light inside of him getting brighter and brighter, and it was the spirit. It was that part of him that was eternal. And, you know, that to me was incredible. And when he did pass away, you know, my wife sat by his bed holding his hand. The words that came to mind, "Where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting?" And I think that was just remarkable to me, and such a tangible testimony of the comfort of God to be held in a place where you know those words to be true when you're holding the hand of your child that's passed away. That's grace, and that is love, and that's beauty.
One final question I really wanted to ask is just, you know, if you think about, you know, Dave Gotts 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and your faith and relationship with God at that point, say prior to all of this, and now you think of Dave Gotts today, and your faith with Jesus today, what are some ways in which your journey through such suffering and hardship and yet such beauty and profound encounter, in what ways are you different? In what ways is your relationship with God different? In what ways do you see God differently because of all that you have been through?
Yeah, that's such a question that is loaded with so many possible responses. I think I'm a different person. I think I have been transformed through what we've walked through. You know, the younger me, Andrew, was very confident, you know, very black and white. If God says he's going to do it, then he's going to do it. You know, that's how you start kind of ministries in a place like China, you know.
Right.
You can't think about all of the problems that can happen. You have to focus in on what God is capable of. And, you know, that I think there's kind of a sense of maybe not being quite so sure about some things that I used to be sure of, and yet now being so much more sure about things that I used to not be so sure of. So that sense of God's goodness, the sense of his grace, the sense of his love. My relationship with God is so much closer today than it ever was before I walked through that season and that suffering. And I look at it like this. You know, suffering came into my life, and I don't believe that God sent it. You know, that's my own personal perspective. I don't believe that God gave Kieran cancer. I don't believe that my wife's current battle with cancer is given by God. I think these things happen for many, many reasons, whether we attribute it to the fall, or whether we just attribute it to the randomness of cells that become dysfunctional.
Yeah.
But I don't believe that God gave Kieran or Linda cancer. But what I do believe is this, that through that experience, God broke me, and then he made me more whole than I could have ever been if I hadn't gone through those things. I am more of a Christ lover, Christ follower, passionate disciple, now than I could have ever been if I hadn't gone through those things. It was like almost he looked at what was happening and he said, "I think I can bring something good out of that. I think I can move Dave along the journey that he needs to go, not because I've made it happen, but because I can bring good out of it." And you know, we have a choice when we're in those situations. We have a choice. Well, I say it's a choice. Sometimes it maybe doesn't feel like a choice, but I think we do ultimately have a choice whether we will lean in or lean away from God. And I felt like I didn't know how to lean into God, but somehow through my community, through that conference, I was led back to that point. And in leaning into him, it opened a doorway to growing and becoming in a way that I could never have anticipated in the past.
Yeah. Dave, look, this has been absolutely brilliant. It's been so encouraging to listen to your story. Encouraging not because, you know, your story was one of perfect answers from God every single moment. Beautiful, because your story is one where over a decent period of time, the Lord walked with you, walked with your family in some real moments of abject horror and pain and trial. And yet, just like you say, walked you through the valley of the shadow of death in such profound ways. I know that people listening would have been really encouraged. So many takeaways there for them to connect to. And like you say, everybody's story is differently. And I'm sure if you're listening to this, you probably have your own journey in this. But I know that much of what Dave's just shared will be an encouragement, will help you to rethink some things, will help you to recenter perhaps your desire to continue to lean into that encounter with God and his presence. And we want to encourage you to do so. Dave, thank you. What are some ways that people who are listening, if you're open to this, could maybe reach out and connect with you? How can they follow the work of ICC? How might they be able to connect with you personally?
Yeah, absolutely. We'd love people to learn more about the work we do. International China Concern, of course, we have our website. If you simply Google International China Concern, you will find us. People are very welcome to reach out to me. I can be contacted through ICC's Canadian office. Just simply drop them an email and they will make sure that that comes to me. I'd love to connect and talk with anybody that feels like having a conversation could be helpful. Because I think what I would want everybody to understand is, you know, I've walked through those really difficult things, but I'm a happy person. You know me, Andrew. Yeah. We've spent time together. We like to laugh. And despite all of this stuff that's gone on, that's been heartbreaking, there's still joy, there's still love, there's still those things that make life beautiful. And that's where God can bring you to, no matter what place you're in, on that journey through suffering. So please, yeah, people can reach out to me by all means, and I would love to interact with them.
Brilliant. Dave, our love to you, to Linda, to Jamie, standing with your family, continuing to stand with you and Linda, of course, as Linda continues her own journey. We'll be praying for you guys. And thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks, Andrew.
I don't know about you, but I think I could listen to Dave talk about his life and his journey and what he's been through for hours and hours. What an incredible insight he's had and he's given us today. Feels like you're sitting down with like a wise sage who's just lived life well. So I hope that you've been blessed by that. Do please continue to think of Dave and pray for him and his family as they face the recent passing of Linda. And we're praying and standing with you, Dave. And thanks so much for being willing in this season that you're in to let us have your insight and put it out there for people to be blessed by. Our next episode coming up shortly is with a interview of an incredible woman that I've met just through this podcast. Her name is Kate Reed. And very early on in the journey of this podcast, she reached out on email just to encourage me, to encourage the work that we're doing through the podcast and how it had really helped her as she was going through the tragedy of having just lost her husband. The death of her husband and the processing of that was something that she really connected to through this podcast. And I thought that would be a fantastic interview. So we kind of emailed back and forth a little bit. I found out a little bit more about her story. Found out that she was connected to Hong Kong, that we had actually known each other in the old days here in Hong Kong. We had a chance to sit down and have a chat together a few months back. She's just like Dave, an incredible person who's gone through something that none of us would really want to go through. And she's been able to process it deeply. She's been able to really articulate the ups and downs of that journey and now what it is like for her to be a single mom. So I think that'll be an episode that'll just provide great insight for all of us. I'm really looking forward to putting that one out shortly. By all means, we want to hear from you, just like how Kate reached out. You know, much of the time, I find recommendations for people to interview for this podcast because you guys reach out to me. So you can send me an email at contact@abrokenhallelujah.com. And I would love to hear from you, connect with you, hear any encouragement, any feedback, as well as any recommendations of stories or people that you know that we could be connecting to in this time. So thanks so much. Check out the previous episode on Shane if you have not done so already. Look forward to Kate's episode coming out shortly. And in between, I hope you guys continue to think and pray for Dave. And thanks once again for being a part of this community.